On Draft Podcast. Again, I'm your host, Corey Kinnon, fake Corey Kinnon on Twitter. If you guys are listening on Apple, Spotify, do what you got to do. Get those ratings up, get those reviews up. I really do appreciate it. We are into the month of May, halfway through the month of May now, birthday month. Hit big old 32 on Wednesday. So that's exciting. But as always, well, not as always, because it's going to come to an end at some point, but we are going to continue on our scouting series of what to watch for when watching X position. So far we've covered quarterbacks with Derek Klassen of Reception and Bleacher Report, knocked out of the park. We've covered running backs with Jordan Reed of ESPN, knocked out of the park. I am thrilled to say that I've got a pretty stellar guest to talk about wide receivers as well. So I am just beyond stoked about this conversation that I'm about to share with you as well, as I have The Athletic's Dane Brugler joining me to talk about wide receivers. We break it down, the nuances of body types, what to look for, what kind of traits are overhyped, what if we have any biases we're trying to overcome and see if that's caused us to miss on players. Just a really unique conversation. And again, I couldn't be thrilled with the guests that have agreed to do this, from Derek to Jordan to now Dane. And I like to think that I've got a pretty stellar lineup the rest of the way through as well. So I'm very stoked about this series. I'm very excited about it. It has turned out so well. Tight ends has already been recorded as well, which is going to come out on Monday. And that guest is amazing as well. And I'm just so excited to share this series with you. And I'm hoping that you are getting a lot out of it. I'm hoping you are enjoying it. And if you are one of those people who feel like, you know, I've been thinking about doing this for a little while, I've been thinking about maybe trying to do some draft content, I'm hoping that this is the push that you need to know, like, oh, I can do this. This is a good next step to start digging deep into it. So that's the goal of this series. But again, if you're just a casual listener who loves the NFL drafts and just kind of want to know the process, then I hope you're enjoying it as well. So I'm not going to babble on too much longer, and let's just get over to that conversation with Dane. All right, I am here with The Athletic's Dane Brugler. Got a piece of his time here in April, a little bit before the draft. And then we, again, continuing on our what to watch for when watching X position, I got Dane to talk about wide receivers. And so, Dane, I'm thrilled to have you on.
No, thanks, man. This is going to be fun. Wide receiver, it's almost like a dance, right? Wide receivers, corners. That might be my favorite position battle to study, because it's high-level athletes, but also so much technical savvy involved. And so, yeah, this will be a fun discussion.
So much nuance between people who make big boards, do draft content as well, between those two positions, wide receiver and corner as well. There's always so much variety of who's the top, who's in the middle. But before we dive in, Dane, again, really the purpose of this series, the purpose of this podcast is just to help listeners, to help people who want to get into draft content kind of understand how easy it is to get into, almost. Like, of course it takes hard work, and then at some point you get to a level where you need to build a rapport with agents, with athletes, with, you know, personnel, things like that. But like the art of evaluating all 22 is pretty available these days. I don't know if that's the way the NFL or college programs would like it, but that's how it is. And you know, coaches clinics are all over YouTube. They're very available. So like it's a pretty available and subjective thing to get into, where like NFL teams are wrong all the time too. So it's really low stakes. And so to start, I just kind of want to know, like, what was your journey to getting into what you do today?
Well, I'm a Northeast Ohio kid. So when the Browns came back in 99, and I'm 12 years old, I fell in love with the art of evaluation. And it's like, okay, what makes a good college player a good pro? And, you know, why might they not work out? And the whole process. And so it went from this overzealous hobby to something I figured out in high school. Like, this needs to be my career. This needs to be what I'm doing day in, day out. And you know, just doing it on my own. Obviously, we didn't have the type of resources that we do now. Back then, I'm making myself sound old, but that's how it was, you know, 15, 20 years ago. And I went to Mount Union. I worked for the football team, obviously a great D3 program. Pierre Garçon and I were seniors together. So we had scouts coming through all the time. And it was my job to take them around and take care of them and do all that kind of stuff. But that's how I kind of built my network. I'm still in touch with a lot of those scouts today. That was my informal scouting education, was learning from those guys, asking questions. And then, you know, a big part of what we do is just making mistakes and self-evaluating, understanding, okay, why did I miss on this player? You know, was it something I fundamentally need to change with my evaluation? Or maybe I just watched the wrong tapes. Maybe I need to do a better job of spreading out the tapes that I watch instead of just focusing on you know, certain things. There's so many things that go into this, and it's a lot of experience based, because you learn your own process, you learn what works, what doesn't. And with the NFL game always evolving, you have to always evolve as an evaluator. You know, you have to always be trying to fine tune your process to be better, just like NFL teams are doing the same thing. So yeah, it's been a fun journey up to this point, and you know, hopefully that continues.
Love it. I love it. Yeah. Making mistakes is huge. And I've noticed that as well. Like I bug you all the time, and I've bugged a million different people. Like you learn so much just by like taking that risk and saying, hey, I'll message this person. We'll see if they say something back or not. Well, you never know. But let's dive into wide receiver now. Again, we've hit quarterback, we've hit running back. Before we dive into like the actual nuances of the position, I want to talk a little bit about some of the outlying aspects of evaluating a wide receiver, such as body type. Like people use production metrics, especially for receivers, the value of like an X receiver versus a Z receiver, are they valued the same in today's NFL? Kind of those types of things. So starting with body type, do you find that you have a bias towards a certain body type of receiver, or do you find that you have a bias against a certain body type of receiver?
And that is something that I've had to work through, you know, like last year, not valuing Zay Flowers enough. I mean, Zay Flowers is still, you know, a top 4 or 5 receiver for me in the class, but maybe not having him higher because of the size. Same thing with Tank Dell. I mean, no one could cover him at the Senior Bowl in those practices. And I mean, I still liked him, had a third round grade on him, but I should have had him higher. The size, I do want more size at the position. And that's why, like this year, Ladd McConkey has been one of those guys for me where it's like, oh man, no one can cover him. He's creating after the catch, before the catch. But I just wish he were bigger. And especially when he has durability concerns and has, you know, battled injuries, that's something that is hard to get over for me personally. So size, body type, that is something that plays a factor that I'm doing need to do a better job of. You know, you can recognize the talent, but understanding that while size matters, it's not something that you don't want to miss on the player because you maybe valued size over the other strengths that he has as a player.
Yeah, I feel like I'm the exact opposite. I'm always really wary of like the 6'4", 210, 220 dudes. I'm like, sure. Can you run? Can you separate? Like, can you get in and out of breaks? Unless you really show me. Like, I was still pretty decently high on Cedric Tillman, but like, I was like, this guy's just running in a straight line, or he's running a slant. And, you know, but so I feel like I'm the opposite end of that. But how do you evaluate then going to like production metrics? And this is just, you know, using box scores in the particular cases I'm about to lay out. But again, there's like Dominator rating, which I've lost track of like how many different, but there's just so many different metrics out there. Yeah. So when it comes to a guy like Adee Mitchell, like Ladd McConkey, like Jermaine Burton, who's, I would say all of their tape is pretty good. Like they're, I mean, with Burton, obviously there's some other stuff there, and maybe a little bit with AD as well, but like their production on the field though, doesn't tend to match kind of the dominance that you see on tape or the traits that you see on tape for these guys. So how do you sift through some of that stuff?
Yeah, and that's why for me, I never look at the advanced metrics before I watch a player. I try to go in kind of a process, and it's tough to do that because we can't evaluate these guys in a vacuum. You know, you can't help but hear this or that or see something on Twitter or whatever. Like we can't do this in a vacuum. But I try to get a tape grade and a tape opinion based off of just what I'm seeing with this guy on the field, how he's moving, how he's winning down the field. And so I'm trying to get my own conclusions there. And then I use the stats as more of a cross-checking exercise. It's kind of the same way we use the combine, right, with the athletic testing. On film, he looks like a great athlete, and then at the combine runs a 4.4. Okay, you know, kind of check that box. But if he runs in a 4.6, it's like, oh, okay, well, maybe I missed something on the film, or he's slower than I thought, or maybe he's faster than I thought. And so it's a cross-checking exercise. And if I grade a player as, oh, he's playing really well through contact, but then I look at the advanced metrics and, oh, he had a 22% catch rate in contested situations. Oh, okay, maybe I wasn't watching the right tapes, or I need to go back and watch some more of that to make sure I'm finding out what the truth is. I'm not just going by the tape. I'm not just going by the production metrics. I'm trying to find what the truth is. And that's sometimes somewhere in the middle. So that's always a sometimes longer process than you want it to be. But for me, it starts with the tape. It doesn't matter the position. I'm a big believer, firm believer in traits over production. That's at the core of my scouting and what I think a lot of NFL teams, how they view this. And that's not the same thing as saying stats don't matter. Of course they do. I want guys that were productive in college, and there's different, not all productions created equal, put it that way. And I think that's important to factor in as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And then the last, like, outside thing before we get into the nitty gritty of the wide receiver position is, I think we went from a position maybe 8 years ago where it's like, if you're not playing X receiver, you're not a first round pick. And now, like, the game has evolved so much. There's so much 11, 10 personnel now. And now we're starting to see these Zs who can win in the slot, who can win in the Z, who can even get up on the line if they want to every once in a while. And it doesn't really matter because there's 3-4 corners on the field anyway. So even if you're a Z, you're going to be beating press at some point. Like, where do you do? How do you differentiate the value between an X and a Z? Is it pretty much a wash at this point? Like, it doesn't matter? Or do you still take a little bit into consideration X versus Z there?
Yeah, and I think this is kind of a moving target because some teams really put a lot of stock in that. I think it's maybe an old school thinking with the way things used to be, how you need that X, you need that, and you're looking for a very specific play style and body type. But I think nowadays you want guys that are interchangeable. It's no different than looking at safeties, and it used to be free safety, strong safety. Now, the lines are blurred more than ever, and you want guys that can play interchangeably, play high, can play low, can do all these different things. It's the same thing with receiver. Now, not every receiver is going to be, can play the slot, play the Z, and then can also play the X. I mean, that's just, you know, some players have their restrictions. But I when you look at this class, outside the top three, how many true X receivers are there in this draft class? You know, it's just, I don't think that what most people or most teams believe is an X receiver, there's just not always a lot of those guys, and at least guys that you project as NFL starters. So, I think it's maybe out of necessity more than anything. And I think, you know, with offenses evolving, teams are more open to just getting the best receivers out there and then accommodating them based off of what your quarterback can do. And we've seen more and more offensive coordinators think outside the box and be creative with how they want to attack defenses. And so you look at the teams that are winning in the NFL, and you look at the Chiefs and you look at the Bills, and obviously they've got good quarterback play, but they also look at some of their receivers and how they use them in these different ways. It's not as cookie cutter as just XYZ, and it's the lines are more blur than ever.
Yeah. I tend to agree, because wide receiver is one of those positions where if you think your team has enough, or if you think you have enough, that actually means you probably need one more. And so, like, if you can get one more who can do a nuanced variety of things, and that might fill your room, or you might need that one guy that can just dominate outside. Diving into the actual position now, I want to start with route running. I've always struggled with route running from a perspective of, I think we all look at different things and consider that person a good route runner because they do this well, but this person doesn't because they don't do exactly what that person does. But I think there's more nuance to route running than just that. And I think a good way to kind of break that, I think almost the perfect example is the 2022 draft with the two Ohio State receivers, Garrett Wilson, Chris Olave. Everybody saw Chris Olave and like, that guy is a smooth route runner. That guy gets in and out of his breaks, which, again, Chris Olave does. He's a very smooth athlete, really does. But then we looked at Garrett Wilson and said, well, that guy takes an extra step. You know, maybe there's an extra step there, not as crisp coming out of his breaks. But when I watched Garrett Wilson, I saw a more sudden route runner to the point where I'm like, I don't know if an extra step is necessarily a bad thing. sometimes I think like an extra step can create suddenness. I think a lot of times Garrett Wilson was able to create extra blind spots or get a defensive back to turn their back on him because he took an extra step getting in and out of breaks. And so kind of where do you stand on what it means to be sudden in and out of breaks and what it means to be a good route runner?
The way I look at it is you almost have to separate route running in two categories. For lack of a better term, there's route athleticism and there's route awareness. And so, you know, being able to be sudden and have the quickness needed to snap off the route, but also having the understanding of depth and pacing to understand when to do it and how to set up the DB. And so that's the route awareness part. And some guys, you know, the best of the best have both. Some guys are lean one over the other. But I think when you talk about route running, it starts with, at the line of scrimmage, making every route look the same. I think that is a key thing that a lot of receivers, especially in college, they're not worried about that. But in the NFL, if you don't want that DB to play sticky coverage and get a beat on what you're doing, making every route look the same is so pivotal because those DBs will study you. They will know exactly what's coming based off of the way you line up, what you're doing with your hands, what you're doing with your feet. And if you don't mix it up and make every route look the same, you're in trouble from the get-go. So that's where it starts. And then, you know, with the route awareness, you want to attack defenders at the stem. You want to understand how to find their blind spot. And so it's you could be a 4-3 athlete, but the understanding of how to do that is so pivotal. And so, yeah, I want my receivers to be sudden in short areas where they can accelerate, decelerate on command, break off these routes. But almost more importantly, I want them to understand, all right, I'm more advanced with the way I'm attacking defenders. I understand, okay, give zero indicators to the DB about what I'm doing. It could be on a double move, it could be on a dig, it just whatever route you're running, it needs tempo, it needs purpose, and you know it's really something that it takes repetition. It takes a lot of practice to get those down. Some receivers are very natural at route running. Others, it takes a lot more work. But yeah, ideally you want guys that are sudden and crisp in every route, but also understand the pacing and timing of that, what it takes to get open.
Awesome. So sticking with route running here a little bit longer, there's so many diverse offenses happening at the college level. There's some really pro ready offenses. Like I can think of, kind of what Georgia was doing with, Todd Monken last year. Those wide receivers were running really diverse route trees. They're asked to sink their hips and break 90 towards the sideline. Dig routes inside is what you're getting a really good understanding of how they can move, how well they sink their hips and how well they can get out of breaks at every different degree of angle. But then you have offenses as well, like Tennessee. We've mentioned Tennessee a little bit earlier, where these wide receivers, they've never ran a choice route in their life. You know, they're running nines, they're running twos, they're running hooks. That's pretty much it. How important, I guess, is a diverse route tree to you from a guy like Cedric Tillman, Jalin Hyatt versus, you know, these Bama Georgia receivers who are kind of doing it all. And I think we saw it in Cleveland a little bit this year with Tillman. He did not have a very firm grasp on the playbook when he was on the field. And, you know, I think there's even in that Chicago Bears game, there was an interception where it looked like Joe Flacco threw it right to the safety, but you could tell Flacco was expecting Tillman to bend his post around cover four. And he's never like, that's not something he was ever asked to do at Tennessee. So how much important is a diverse route tree to you? And how steep do you think that learning curve is to come to an offense like Tennessee or UCF and into an NFL offense like that?
Well, like that's a big question around like Brian Thomas Jr. in this draft class, where you watch his film and you see plenty of vertical patterns, slants, but it's a more of an abbreviated route tree. And when you think of college offenses, you know, obviously their number one priority is not, all right, let's just get this guy ready for the NFL. It's let's win games. And this is how we're going to win games, by doing this, this, and this. And so, you understand why college coaches do it the way they do. But when these guys make that jump to the NFL level, it's for some of these guys, it's tough. And that's why the draft process is the draft process, where, you know, the interviews are so important. getting these guys on the whiteboard to understand, okay, or, you know, watch film with them. Okay, you did this, this, and this. Was it based on the coverage? Was it based off of something you saw during the week? Was it, you know, what made you do this? And if the wide receiver understands, and this was a big question, you know, and it works both ways. A guy like DK Metcalf at Ole Miss was not running this advanced route tree. And, you know, that was one of the reasons he fell to the end of the second round was, okay, he's big, strong, going to run in a straight line. But obviously, he's been more than that. Now, he's not the most advanced route runner in just terms of running the full tree with the Seahawks, but he's done enough where, and he's got the physical traits, obviously, where he can go make plays happen. So I think it depends. It's not as strict as I need all my receivers be able to run every branch of the route tree at a high level. It's that's not realistic. But I do need them to understand what every branch of the route tree means and what's expected of him based off of, you know, what we're going to be asking him to do. So some guys aren't equipped for that. It's going to take time. And we have to remember too, when you play receiver in the NFL, timing is paramount. It's everything. If you're not on time with your quarterback, it's an interception or it's incomplete. And it's every little microsecond matters when you're playing receiver. So it's having that mental acumen and that experience, it really is important, but it also is not always easy to project to the next level because a lot of these guys don't run full route trees, but some of them are capable. Some of them have that in them and they have the athleticism and the know-how. It's just you have to project that, and it's a little bit of an unknown variable with a lot of these receiving prospects.
Yeah, that could be an entirely different podcast episode of what are these things that are coachable at the NFL level and what are some things that aren't and how do you differentiate and how do you future cast that? And you can for the most part on a lot of it. But I would say Javon Baker for me is the guy in this class that I watched this tape and I kind of turned off like this guy doesn't run a lot of routes. His route tree is not very diverse. But then you go to Lucas Oil and you watch him live at the combine. It's like, this guy's sinking his hips really well. This guy looks really fluid. This guy looks really smooth. So again, one of those cross-checking elements was like, okay, I think this guy can. Again, that's still different than learning how to run the exact variation of a route that an NFL program wants you to run or to be able to anticipate a choice route based on a defensive look that you get. Completely different things, but checking that box that, okay, this guy can sink his hips if he's asked to, when he's asked to, even though he wasn't asked to. It's a very hard thing to project.
And it's a trust level thing, right? I mean, that example, the Flacco interceptions, is a perfect example where that happens, and all of a sudden, your quarterback is going to lose trust in you as a target. And so, if a coaching staff can't trust a receiver to be out there and be where he needs to be on time, it's going to be hard to get on the field. And you're not getting that experience. You're not getting better. And so, it could go south pretty quickly.
Yeah. Yeah, it sure can. Next thing I want to hit on is separation. Separation is a word that we always hear, you know, in this community and in this context. And it's pretty easy to identify on broadcast or even when you're watching film, like, yeah, that guy's open. But how to get open is kind of a thing that is a little bit harder to find. And so just kind of going through the different ways to separate. Obviously, they're separating in the air vertically, going up high point in the football. Vertical speed and then top of route savviness as well. I love it's Ben Solak at The Ringer who says always commit offensive pass interference. You know, that little top of the route savviness to know how to create that extra cushion away from a defensive back to give a target. But when you think about obviously there's a few more ways to separate other than those three as well. But when you're looking at a wide receiver's ability to separate, are you looking for yes, they have one of those things, they separate? Or are you looking for if a wide receiver only wins in the air, say contested catch situations, N'Keal Harry-ish, that's kind of a red flag. Ideally, what are you looking for? Do you want two of those boxes checked? Do you want all three of those boxes checked? If they have just one of those boxes checked, kind of how do you feel that out in your evaluation process?
Yeah, I think a lot of carryover from what we just mentioned with route running, how timing is so important because, I know like a Ladd McConkey has the short area quickness where he can sink and snap off a 90-degree cut and get open, give his quarterback a target. But what makes him such a dynamic player is the fact that it's also timing-based too. You know, with the way that he will attack – the top of the stem, the way that he will sell his moves, the different body movements that he has. It's able to be timing, but also have the athletic traits to do it. And so, separation, it is one of those things where it's not as black and white or cut and dry as maybe some of these other traits that you're looking for, one of these other categories. But I think, like, just when you watch enough tape of a player, you get a sense of whether he can or he can't, or it's natural for him, easy for him, or if, DBs are always going to be able to read him and kind of get a beat on what he's trying to do. So, there's so many, Garrett, we mentioned Garrett Wilson earlier. He was a guy that, there were times where he was unable to, get that separation because, he's okay with, winning in contested roles because he feels like he can do it. So he didn't always feel the need like, oh, I have to separate from this guy. If my quarterback throws it up, I'm going to come down with it. And a lot of guys come through high school with that mentality because they were always bigger, faster, better than whoever they went up against. And so once you get to the college level, that's when you really hopefully see from these guys the ability to hone in on the timing aspect of separation. And, I mentioned before, finding the blind spot at defensive backs, getting them to turn their hips, things like that. Really, lulling corners to sleep before you switch those gears. Some receivers have a better feel for that than others, while others are going to be more relying on their traits more than, their physical traits more so than some of the technical savvy.
I think that's a perfect segue into talking about body control and I'm going to add ball tracking to that, but just specifically body control, you've talked a lot about tempo, that extra gear, throttle, we can call it whatever we want to call it, but that ability for a receiver to fluidly and smoothly be able to go from either shift up or even shift down a gear. And specifically, I want to talk about that in terms of deep ball tracking. Deep ball tracking is when I first started doing this 5 years ago, I was out of grad school. I was bored, whatever. I picked it up. You'd see these wide receivers. They make these gigantic vertical leaping plays. And you're like, oh, that guy's good. That guy made an unbelievable play. And now if I were to go back and watch that same guy, I'd be like, yeah, but like he turned, he exposed his chest, he exposed his hands. Like he probably could have just slowed his tempo, stacked the defender, hit his hands till late. So that's, I think stacking is oftentimes an overlooked thing when we're talking about receivers and the ability to, hey, hide your hands, hide your frames, show them late, don't turn, don't high point, and catch it over your shoulder. And then obviously we can talk about body control as well in all of that as well. How important, out of all of the things we've talked about, Sarah, do you think that body control is in terms of evaluating wide receivers?
I think it's pretty high. I mean, the ability to make a play. I mean, the way I kind of look at it is I call it GGI skills, go and get it skills, the ability to go and get the football. And, it is something that kind of like what you're talking about. Like, and that's why we love Marvin Harrison Jr. so much, right? Is because he is big. He is fast. He does have a lot of these things you're looking for. But he's so good, he's late with his hands, even late with his eyes. So he's not giving away these little, breadcrumbs for corners to understand when that ball is coming. And a lot of these guys, you see the basketball background, and I think that helps with down the field and the ability to box out, go make a catch. You mentioned stacking. That is a really, I think, underrated skill to, the ball is at its apex in the air, but you know where you need to be down the field to catch the ball perfectly. So you're already stacking that receiver, maybe slowing your route a little bit, understanding how to maintain that space so you can run underneath it. You're not going to be late. You're not going to over stride and give the corner a chance at it. That ball tracking, so even when it's high in the air, you know where it's going, and that's not easy to do. A lot of receivers are inconsistent when it comes to the ball tracking aspect. So yeah, the body control, it's on one hand, it's contorting your frame to adjust to the football. But yeah, there's an art to it as well. It's not just the having the biomechanics to be able to do it. It's the understanding of body position and where you need to be to make it happen as well. So again, I feel like a common theme we've talked about with route running and separation is the physical ability to do it, but also there's a know-how aspect where it's an understanding both technically and intellectually where you know you where you need to be so you can make a play on the ball and the defender can't.
I like to say, when I'm like watching a wide receiver and evaluating in the back of my mind, I think route running and separation are essential to playing wide receiver, and body control is what makes somebody special. Of course, you can have those other wide receivers, like I think George Pickens is a really good example, where like route running and separation is not there, but the body control is. So he still makes special plays, even if like his game is relatively incomplete. But I think that is really what can stand apart, because there are a lot of really good route runners. I mean, I think there are so many specialty trainers out there that are now just teaching these guys how to have quick feet and how to get in and out of breaks. But, you know, guys like Jerry Jeudy, Elijah Moore might be really good examples of this. But when it comes to tracking the football, catching the football, it's kind of shown some cracks at the NFL level in through like through contact, things like that as well. A couple other elements I want to hit on here real fast. Again, Doug Martin got coined the muscle hamster coming out when he was drafted in 2012, I believe that was, from just being really short, really stocky, and running through people's faces. We're starting to see these prototypes coming at the college level at wide receiver now as well. And so when you're stacking guys like, again, we got to stop comping them all to Deebo Samuel. Every time we see one of these yak monsters, we're like, oh, that's Deebo Samuel, without realizing that Deebo Samuel is one of one. But I think it makes it even more difficult. How do we place a guy whose specialty is creating after the catch? How do we rank those against those guys like the other natural separators, the other natural route runners, like a guy like Malachi Corley, a guy like Malik Washington, those guys who specialize in what they can do with the football in their hands? How do we go about evaluating their skill set versus the other skill sets and knowing how to line those up?
Well, that's it. When the majority of your targets are within 5 yards of the line of scrimmage, it makes it difficult because, okay, does that mean that's what you have to be at the next level, or are you more than that? And that's where, you know, the Senior Bowl and East-West Shrine and, you know, these All-Star games hopefully give you a better sense for what they are that you didn't see enough of on film. Because, a lot of these receivers, you see them mostly used on screens, on jets, you know, manufactured touches to get the ball in their hands to let them go make a play, you know, be a catch and go creator. And there's certainly value in that. There's no doubt about it. But, you know, we've seen enough of these guys where it's not being a more complete receiver makes it tough to keep them on the roster unless you're really, really good in that area. Who'd the Browns draft out of UCLA not too long ago?
Running back.
Yes. Is he a running back? Is he a receiver? Can he be, okay, if we're going to play him at receiver, can he be more than just a quick dump off screen target? If you're not good enough as a return man and, you know, if you're not a dynamite player in that role, it's going to be tough to keep you on the roster and, you know, really make a case for why you deserve to, you know, be there if you aren't Deebo Samuel and aren't high level in that role. So yeah, that does make it tough and Malachi Corley is a great example of that this year. We'll have to see how that plays out and see how that adjusts how we think about those guys.
Last aspect I want to hit on here, and then we'll get you out of here, Dane, is obviously wide receiver blocking. Obviously, you're not spending high draft capital on a guy because he blocks really well. Like that's just like the Minnesota Vikings could care less if Justin Jefferson blocks well. The Dallas Cowboys could care less if CeeDee Lamb blocks well. Like I think that's the reality of it, but there's still an element to it. To blocking as a wide receiver. And I guess my perspective, you talk to scouts way more than I do. Kind of like, what is their ability to evaluate a wide receiver who blocks well? Is that like something that like they super in-depth look for? Or is that just something they'll put a star next to a guy's name or a plus sign next to a guy's name? They're like, yes, he also does this.
Does that make sense? I think it's more of a mentality than anything. Like if he shows, okay, and it could be, you know, digging out a safety. It could be just you're not shy of those second level collisions, you know, and it's different than what tight ends are asked to do or running backs are asked to do. This is you're on the edge. It's more about, okay, do you have a sound, square, balanced blocking base, and do you stay after it? You know, do you stay in between ball and defender? That's really the key. Can you stay in between those two? And yeah, it's not sealing an edge block. It's not, but there is a mentality to it, you know, running your feet at contact and just, you have to be, you don't have to be an asset in the run game. You just can't be a negative in the run game. You know, you cannot, not every receiver is going to be an A-plus blocker. You just can't be an F or a D. You know, you can't be someone that teams can't trust out there. And there are some, you know, Marvin Harrison Jr., he has some nice blocks on film. He also has some other times where he's just very disinterested in getting the block done. And that's one of the areas where he can get better. So, yeah, blocking is... it's not going to just pull you down. If you're that good as a receiver, teams can overlook it. But if you are a B-level receiver, you better be a B-level blocker, or they will find another B-level receiver who is a better blocker than you. And there's so many receivers out there. It's a high-volume position. And, you know, if you're not good enough as a receiver, you better have all your ducks in a row, and blocking is a big part of that.
There it is. All right, we hit on route running, separation, ball tracking, body control, yak ability, and blocking. I think we hit on some pretty core tenets of playing wide receiver, you know, and what to look for. So, Dane, again, I appreciate the time that you were willing to give me. Do you have anything else to add? Again, it's Dane Brugler. I don't have to ask where you can find him. You know where to find him. Thank you so much. And again, if you have anything else to add, feel free to do that right now.
No, I think, yeah, if you're pass catching, I think sometimes we get so convoluted with what we're looking at each position. Sometimes it's best to keep it simple. And at receiver, it's okay. Can you get open? Can you catch the ball? Can you make something happen after the catch? And obviously, those three tenets, there's these offshoots of all the different ways that you can measure that. But if you focus on those three things, that's a great place to start with projecting these guys to the next level.
Awesome. Well, there you have it. Again, Dan Brugler, thank you so much.
Anytime. Thanks.